Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. Well, come November, of course, you know you're all voting for who you want to be the next president of the United States and who you want to be the next U.S. senator representing Illinois and all sorts of state representative and Senate races in the state. Lots of elections, judges. But you know, you actually have an important referendum that you're going to be voting on as well on the ballot. And this is one of those referendums you don't want to just, you know, hit yes, hit no. I don't know what they're talking about. Don't know anything about it, because this particular vote will impact lives and impact jobs and perhaps even impact you. You'll understand what I'm talking about. This is the referendum that allows you to decide whether or not the Cook County Recorder of Deeds office should be merged with the Cook County Clerk's office and create just one office. Why would we do that? Well, let's find out. And let's find out if it's a good thing or bad thing. Best person to talk to, of course, is the Cook County Recorder of Deeds, because this will impact her and her office. And she's got some thoughts about that. Karen Yarborough, former state representative, by the way, is joining us now. And Madam Recorder, thanks for being with me.
Hey, my pleasure, Paul.
So as we know, this is going to be on the ballot. People will get to decide. What do you want voters who are listening to us now who might, let's be honest, they might just go, well, I'm just going to vote yes, because I, you know, there's people that just go, I like all sorts of mergers and consolidations. What do you want them to know?
Be careful what you wish for. So, Paul, let me start off by saying the Office of the Recorder of Deeds, we record, store, and maintain land records and other, you know, official documents for perpetuity for public and private use. And this facilitates home ownership. So anybody who owns a home, anybody who wants to own a home, they're going to touch our office in some form or fashion. Since I've been here, we've made a number of improvements in the office, and we even do what's called e-recording these days. This means that, you know, from somebody's fingertips to their computer, from home or wherever, they could, in fact, record deeds. And this is mostly the title offices and attorneys. So for the most part, most people don't touch our office unless they come to get a copy of their deed, or they may want a copy of their release when they've paid for their mortgage.
So that sounds like an argument to say that it is not critical, that it could be merged.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's what you're saying.
No, but that's statutorily, that's what we do.
Okay.
Now, let me tell you what else we do. Since the 2006, 7, 8, when the mortgage bubble burst, a lot of things happened. Of course, you know, they bailed the banks out, you know, on Wall Street, but they forgot us on Main Street, and, you know, left havoc in our communities all across the United States. Several things happened there. People lost their homes. People were underwater. All kinds of things happened. And, of course, we record all of those kinds of things, but it really, really impacted communities. Well, you know, sometimes when things happen, there are other people out there that look at it as, oh, here's an opportunity. And the opportunity I'm talking about is property fraud. So our office maintains a property fraud unit, and it helps homeowners investigate fraudulent filings against their property, and it coordinates law enforcement efforts on behalf of victims. I'm concerned about the average homeowner, the person who, you know, they may not be very sophisticated, but you know what? They're paying for their home. They want to own their home, and they certainly don't want fraudsters, you know, being at work, taking it away from them.
And this happens. I mean, this is a real problem.
Oh, my God. You have no idea. So several years ago, 2011, I believe it was, I was in the General Assembly as a state rep and happened to see an article in the New York Times, and it was about our own Stephanie Neely, who was at the time the treasurer of the city of Chicago.
Sure.
And she and about 30 other people, this happened to them. And what I mean by this, someone these Moore Science Temple people, they actually went to her house, changed the locks on her door when she wasn't there, and changed the name on her deed. So most people would ask me, Karen, how does that happen? Well, I was asking the same question because I had never heard of this kind of thing. But since I've been in office, and it'll be 4 years pretty soon, a lot of this has happened. And a lot of this has been brought into the Cook County Recorder Deeds Office, and we pumped up our property fraud unit to help homeowners investigate. Because what happens, Paul, unfortunately, you know, this happens, you don't know about it, and then when you get ready to sell or get a second mortgage or something like that, that's when it comes up and you find out you have all of this going on and there's nothing that you can do about
right.
it. So we came up with the idea of doing a property fraud alert program, and this contacts the homeowner and lets them know that anytime there's a change in on anything dealing with their deed, they're going to get a phone call or an email from us. But we did something else. I went back to the General Assembly and I said, hey, look, guys, I need some tools to help me fight this, because it's not fair that people be victimized twice. First of all, they have this thing that happens to them where somebody has pretty much on paper taken their home. And on the other side, they have to go pay an attorney to unwind this thing to get this fraudulent, you know, filing off their deed. So I thought that that was really bad. And so a lot of times, you know, properties end up in limbo as a result. So to me, the service that we offer, now we still do our, you know, storing and recording of, you know, of deeds, but we do more now. We actually coordinate with law enforcement. Now, people come in, they tell us what they think has happened. We investigate it. We have investigators now in our office that investigate this. And people aren't paying a penny for this service. You know, it's already included. We didn't go to the county board and ask them for more money to do any of this. We just do it because I think it's the right thing to do.
So I hear what you're saying, which is if you look at the part of the recorder's office that everybody knows about, everybody thinks about, it sounds like you're saying, well, if that's all you look at, you would understand where some of these efforts to merge the offices
come from. But, you know, we're the second largest office in the United States. And of the top 10 offices in the United States, those that have merged, none of them have a property fraud office. None of them have a veterans office. And I didn't even go into what we do for veterans. But I think it's penny wise and pound foolish for us to try to become like the other offices who just simply, you know, record deeds and what have you without, you know, bringing into play today what's going on today and what we need recorders' offices to do today.
So what do you say? I think it was Lawrence Masal of the Civic Federation who made a comment that said, hey, L.A. did this. They did it 30 years ago. They're doing just fine.
Yeah, they don't have a fraud office, nor do they have a veterans office. And guess what? If the people of Cook County want us to become more like L.A. County, who's doing none of that, then we can shuck all of this, and they're absolutely correct. Let's, you know, consolidate us, and we'll do less. People aren't asking us for less. They're asking us for more.
So some people might be saying, well, what are we talking about? How much are we looking to save? And my understanding is, first of all, this is not going to be short-term gain. It's more long-term gain because initially there'd be expenses incurred in even making this merger happen, right?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Peoria County just did this a year ago, and they are wringing their hands because they now see that it's much, much more than what they anticipated. And as I mentioned to you, Paul, you know, we're the second largest office, not just in Illinois. We're the largest in Illinois, but we're the largest in the United States. So Peoria County, that's a pretty big county, but they've got over $1 million in unexpected costs. They don't know what they're going to do or how they're going to do it. They just figured, well, it makes sense. You know, we'll just do this. Other offices have done this larger than us, but they didn't figure out the cost.
So the savings, Madam Recorder, is supposed to be $1 million when they get there, would be $1 million a year. Now that, you know, it's
what
not.
Is that based on? Whose number is that? That's the sponsor of this this ordinance. That's somebody else's guess. And I think the Civic Federation, they just pulled out a number. Oh, we could probably save maybe 5%. Well, that's irresponsible in my view. It's irresponsible to disrupt people's lives on a, oh, it might be. Hey, find out what it could be. And we've asked the county board to take a look at this. Hey, look, you know, do a study for us, an independent study. Come talk to us. We'll tell you, you know, you have our budget. You know what we do. We'll tell you what those anticipated costs could be. We want to know, too. I mean, we could do it, but everybody would say, oh, well, they just, you know, they came up with that.
It's got to be, it's got to be somebody outside.
It's got to be independent.
Right.
And that's what we're arguing against. You know, I've run the gamut with what people think we're trying to do here. Oh, you know, that's going to save money. Well, yeah, it may save money sometime. Someday, but it's going to cost money and plenty of it up front.
I want to tackle a couple of the political pieces that go along with it, because for folks who have not followed this issue, I think we've clarified that. I think you've taught them what they need to know to make a decision.
Sure.
But those who are following this certainly heard that there was a lot of allegations, many charges that this is a race-based decision. Because when you look at the votes on the board, it seemed as though African-Americans versus whites, the African-Americans wanted to keep them unmerged, and the whites seemed to want to merge them. Accusations against Commissioner John Fritchie, who was one of the latest people to make this proposal, that he was racist in doing so. I know John Fritchie. You know John Fritchie. That's the last thing I would ever accuse him of being. But I think coming from you, it makes the most sense. Was there anything racist behind this effort at all?
Well, I understand exactly what people, you know, I know you know that this is, again, a time of unrest in this city, in this county, and especially as it relates to race. Now, you know, I've only been here 4 years, but the majority of the people who work in my office are African Americans. Most of them were hired by my predecessor, and going all the way back to Jesse White and even before that. But a lot of them, this was, you know, allow people to get a job, to keep a job, to have good benefits, and be able to raise their families and what have you. So I know that many people are looking at this as a way of getting rid of a lot of African-American workers. And many of our workers are, you know, SEIU employees. They're very good employees in terms of knowing what to do in this office. And quite frankly, Paul, they're afraid. They're concerned because they think they're going to lose their jobs. Now, as far as race is concerned, what I know about having conversations with people about race, whether it's racist or not, is in the heart, not the eye, but the heart of the beholder. So I really can't speak to this. I didn't go to the meeting to discuss race or any of that. What I went to discuss was, hey, you better not be so fast about trying to do this. You better understand what this is and what it could be. Some folks have said, well, Karen, you know, you're just trying to save your job. Well, I can get a job. I've been successful in getting jobs, and I could get another one if I need to have one. But this office is just a very important office in my view, and I think the direction in which it is going, the fact that we are the number one when it comes to the sign-ups for property fraud in the country, because we know how important it is for Cook County taxpayers to have some, you know, sense of peace of mind about, you know, owning their property and somebody not taking it from them.
Well, so just for clarification, I am not hearing you say that you don't believe this is, I don't want to word that as a double negative. Are you?
Well,
let's
don't
just
know,
clarify
Paul,
your position about the racist motivation here.
About I can't speak to that. I really cannot speak to that. I hear, and I've talked to some of these the folks who are saying, oh, Commissioner Boykin, I think he's the one that raised it first. He said, last month it was Dorothy Brown, this month it's Karen Yarbrough. And I never thought about that. You know, I mean, I'm here to provide a service for the Cook County taxpayers and in this office and give my all to making sure people's properties are. Now, I know John Fritchie. I mean, I served with him. I've not seen that in him. You know, usually you can tell, you know, if somebody's
racist. Well, that's why I'm asking the question, because Fritchie's the one that made the motion. He was incredibly offended, upset by that allegation, saying there could be nothing further from the truth in describing him. I know him. You know him. And I guess I was just asking you to say, to the extent you know Fritchie, well, I'm not going to put words in your mouth.
I don't know that about him.
What's that?
I do not know that about him. I've not seen that.
Right.
You know, in the time that I have worked.
That for him to say was motivated by budget, if that's what his heart is saying, you have no objection with
you
that.
You know what? Knowing John Fritchie, I know he could do a better job than what he's done with this. Okay? If he's looking for press pops or whatever, you know, and grandstanding, I would tell you absolutely that's what he was doing, because he could do a better job in terms of, you know, what is this and what's this going to mean? Every time we ask for, hey, look, what about doing? Oh, there's been lots of studies done. That's simply not true.
Well, there have been studies done, but they were done quite a while ago.
2003?
Quite a while ago.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, you know what? And the time flies when we're talking. I think if John Fritchie were with us right now, he would, I'm pretty sure, say that he's being motivated by budgets and dollars as we try and cut things from wherever we can. And what I'm hearing you say as well is that race may not be the motivation, but in the end, there's a lot of African-Americans who work for the recorder's office. So in the end, African-Americans would be impacted in terms of jobs. But I suppose that depends how the offices merged and who lost their job in the process, if any. I don't know. I don't know that that's been clarified.
And I don't either.
Well, I'll tell you what, we've covered all bases. Anything final you want to say about that? Once again, we'll look back to our listeners who have a vote to make. I'll give you a moment for a kind of a closing statement on it.
Well, closing statement is thankfully the League of Women Voters came and sat down with me and talked with me about this whole issue. And they, I think, are a good barometer in terms of what should or should not be based on the facts. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, whatever they say, and I know that they're going to do their due diligence. But they told me that they may not have time to really weigh in and say, yes, you should do this, no, you should do this, you shouldn't do this. Mm-hmm. So I'm really looking to them to do this. And I know, you know, it's a small organization. I used to be a part of them, but I know they do good work. And I'm looking forward to that. In the meantime, I'm going to continue to do the fine work that we do here. And in another segment, I'm going to reach out to you and tell you about somebody we're going to put in jail.
I hope it's not me or you. Wait a minute.
Not at all. There's some bad guys out there, Paul.
All right.
And they're doing some bad things to Cook County homeowners.
Well, I do want you to come back to talk about that. I also want you to come back and just talk about, we've got some, you know, lots of elections coming up. You've got some positions and thoughts about it. You've been in politics a long time. I do want to mention in the end, you were the House sponsor years ago of the legislation that eliminated the death penalty here in Illinois. People should know that about you. And I thank you for your time. This time we'll talk
Paul.
Real soon. My thanks to Karen Yarborough, the Recorder of Deeds for Cook County. Thank you, ma'am.
All right. Bye-bye.
There are certain things that are almost synonymous when you think of the city of Chicago and entertainment, various theaters, various theater groups, of course, but maybe none so as iconic as Second City, right? We all know Second City. I think almost every comedy group, comedy venue has, you know, is an offshoot of what is the classic and one of the most respected venues in the country, if not, in fact, the world. Joining me to talk a little bit about the history of Second City, some of the shows going on there now, and why it is such a magical place to be is Andrew Alexander. He originally from London, England, by the way. He is the CEO, executive producer, co-owner of Second City, and he's been with Second City since 1974. That's an awfully long time. Hey, Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Oh, my God. When you put it that way, it is a long time. I'm glad to talk to you.
Yeah, you're sounding older with every moment that I'm doing this. But
absolutely.
Hey, so take me back to the beginning, because a lot of people know Second City, you know, here on North Avenue and Wells and that area. But actually, it's not where you got your start.
No, it isn't. I actually am a Canadian, and I did. I got a job here working at the Ivanhoe in Chicago in 1972, I think it was, or 73. And I got to know Bernie Salins, who had the operation here in Chicago, and he'd open a satellite operation in Toronto. And
a true legend, by the way.
A true legend. And in 1973, and after 3 months, it closed. So I made a deal on a napkin with Bernie in Chicago, and I said, "Give me a shot at it, and I'll see if I can reopen it." And I did. And my first cast was John Candy, Eugene Levy, Catherine Gilda Radner, Dan Aykroyd. So I had a pretty good group the first step on the boards. And then in 1985, you know, I was able to acquire the Chicago operation.
Wow. some of the folks you worked with and some of those names, you know, I mean, some of them are wild and crazy people, all that sort of thing. So I guess I have to ask you the mystique about Second City. And, you know, we all know the John Belushi issues and stuff. Was it a crazy time? Was it about being part of Second City? Was it about living in the 70s, and some of the 80s? What is it that led to the culture for so many of the fantastic comedians who started there?
Well, it's interesting. I kind of actually came out of a little bit out of the rock and roll world, and there was a sort of similar kind of anarchy that was kind of appealing to me. I worked on the thing called the John Lennon Peace Festival, which was in 1970, the festival that never happened, but it was an interesting group of people. You know, Shep Gordon, a lot of people that were, you know, became household names. And, you know, Alice Cooper used to hang around the, wow. You know, the lobby. Anyway, there was a kind of a real, there was a really sense of, the kind of anarchistic attitude. And I kind of fell in love with Second City pretty rapidly once I got to meet a lot of the people. So it kind of had that rock and roll feel.
Yeah. Alice Cooper, by the way, hangs around my lobby now, by the way.
Absolutely. Well, things change. You know, we're a different world now.
Yeah. You don't know where he's hanging around. So you work with all these incredible talents. What is it about? I almost want to say, what's the mission of Second City? But that's so mundane. I almost want to say, what is special about Second City versus other comedy groups and venues we could be talking about? What makes Second City Second City?
It's obviously the people, and the people that end up on our stages are very unique. You know, if you make it to one of our main stages, you've obviously got good talent. And what makes it very special is that, you know, these actors become writers and actors, and they become so good because they're doing 8 shows a week for 2 or 3 years in a row. And that's unique. There's no theater in the world where you get to sort of do that. You know, you're getting to perform and write your own material with a sort of a level of safety that, you know, you're getting a regular paycheck every week. So there's, I don't know of any other organization that, you know, you're able to do that. And the training is extraordinary. You know, you just can't beat that kind of training.
And the personalities, you know, of course, I'm over at WGN, and one of our news writers in the morning show is a woman named Anne-Marie Saviano. Of course you would. And she's performed there, but also an instructor over there. And so I guess what it lets me want to, you know, to ask people who want to do improv or want to learn the skill. I mean, do you need some natural talent, or can you take a course from Anne-Marie or somebody else and say, no, we can make you good? Or do you have to have that special something like Stephen Colbert some of the other greats?
Well, there are all kinds of people now that are attracted to this kind of work. I mean, it's really taken a whole other, you know, gone to a whole other level. I mean, we're dealing with people that, you know, classes now for anxiety disorder, working this autism spectrum. We're sponsoring a study at Mount Sinai in L.A. where, you know, for better outcomes for cancer survivors and terminal patients. So there's a whole other world now that we're into, but a lot of people are attracted to coming to Second City and taking classes or doing it for, confidence issues, not necessarily to pursue a performing career. I would say at least 50% of the people that come to Second City now taking classes are for other reasons.
Yeah, you know, I actually know somebody in the news business, not at this station, but at a different one, and she took classes at Second City for that reason, because she's a great reporter, but she was sort of quiet, and she came there to kind of have it open her up.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that the we're really good at there's a sense of ensemble here, so it's not like you're standing in the mic with one, you know, it's not a stand-up dynamic where it's one person and a mic. This is where you're, in a safety of, say, 15 people in a class. So, you know, and it's not necessarily all about being funny. It's you know, how to make your partner look good, you know, a sense of give and take. You know, we deep the yes and philosophy, which is a very simple axiom, but it's very true. You know, to move something forward, you know, you just have to say yes.
Yeah. Let's go to the performance component of this, because people who come to Second City and see the various shows, first of all, I ask you to kind of describe some of the current shows going on. But also, as the talent takes the stage, I mean, every night has got to be different, right? I mean, they're when you're doing improv, do you sort of start with a centerpiece of, we're going to work around this concept, but we're going to play off each other every night? Or when the same people are playing off each other every night, does it get to be a little routine and a little repetitive?
Well, I mean, how our shows are constructed, there's you know, there's what we call a book show, right, where the cast kind of use the improv sets to try out new material, and that changes about every 8 months. We put up a new show. Now, the improv part of the show is always different every night, but that is how we found the material, mm-hmm. which becomes a show, which usually runs 8 to 9 months. I mean, that's sort of the format.
Yeah, I know, because, of course, I go there a lot, and they sort of invite you to stay on afterwards, right, for the late show, because that's where you're going to get new material.
That's exactly it. You know, you're using the audience as your focus group, and you know they're giving you sort of, and that's what keeps us relevant, right? Because you're listening to the audience of what they're responding to.
You recently had a fire in the facility. By the way, let's just catch our listeners up on that. How are things recovered from that?
Actually, operationally, it's fine. You know, where all the theaters are. You know, we were up and running in three weeks, and in fact, all the fire experts said, you know, it's going to take you probably 3 or 4 months to get back up and running, and we did it in 3 weeks, so they were just kind of flabbergasted. Our corporate services department actually is still in your building at the Tribune building. We have a floor over there that, you know, we're probably going to be there for another year because of some of the offices that were above the restaurant that had the fire are
right.
Still not in working order.
So let's talk.
It's a little inconvenient, but. You know, we made it through it.
Well, you're in a nice neighborhood at least, right? Just pop on over to the Tribune building. I want to talk a little bit about, first of all, show, and this is closing relatively soon, but Unelectable You, I just want to talk about the concept of doing it because it was unique for you guys to do it, where you worked with Slate, the political organization, and I did have one of the stars on my Politics Tonight TV show. What a clever way to take a look at, and by the way, in case anybody's figuring it out, Unelectable You is absolutely designed for this year's presidential election. But what great fun to involve the audience in such timely topics. And from what I understood from one of your stars, you tend to get more Democrats than Republicans showing up for that kind of humor.
It seems to. I mean, I think that, you know, I think there's probably a perception that we're kind of, you know, leaning left. But I would say, though, that the show is pretty, you know, I think we take on both parties in a pretty healthy way. We would like. But, you know, I think there's a perception that Second City is kind of a left-leaning company. But, you know, it's we have a lot of fun with Republicans because it's so easy.
Well, this year for sure. But you do crazy things for people who didn't see. But you stepped. I mean, they would. I'm not going to give anything away as people go see this. But you know, during the show, they would call Congressman Mike Quigley and get him on the line and talk to him. They would collect money from the audience to present a skit, but then donate that money to Planned Parenthood. I mean, really clever stuff, all with that political angle to it. Just really inventive.
Yeah. No. I mean, it's. I mean, that's what we do, and I think we do it, you know, better than anybody. And, you know, it's, by the way, I think it's very important to point out this is very much a Chicago thing. You know, I think there's a reason an institution like Second City's, you know, gone as long as it has, because this is a very special city in terms of how it supports its theater, you know, and how it supports its artists. You know, there's a reason why a lot of great artists come out of Chicago is right. Because of the community we're in.
But you did have, I mean, some of the comedy greats that are all Second City, but I'm give some credit to Canada where it's due. John Candy. I'm pretty sure Eugene Levy, and I'm thinking Joan Rivers. Weren't they all Toronto?
No, Joan Rivers to Chicago.
Okay.
Catherine O'Hara, Eugene Levy, Martin Short, Dave Thomas, Mike Myers. You know, Mike was one of our graduates. So I decided to move him from Toronto to Chicago, which is where he really got his start with, you know, SNL.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Canadians are, there's something in the water.
Well, I speak Canadian, so I'm fine having that conversation with you, eh?
Hey.
Talk to me about the main stage shows, especially as we look into the fall and what's ahead. And before you know it, it's holiday time. What can folks look forward to coming up at Second City?
We're working on a new show for main stage that will open after the election, you know, and I don't know after the election if people are going to be interested in politics.
Well, we may all move to Canada and see this show, so don't worry about it.
You know, the door's open. we're just in the midst. We start rehearsal on that in about 2 weeks. We don't have a title for that show yet, but, you know, I have a suspicion it'll be less political than you think because of, you know, I think that people are going to be kind of exhausted, you know, with politics.
Yeah.
I think it's... I mean, we're living in a very, very, very strange time. There's no question about it. You know, you just can't predict, you know, in terms of even if Trump loses, what that really is going to you know, mean. I think it's going to mean there's a constituency now that has reared its head, and, you know, we're going to have to deal with it probably for quite a long time.
Yeah, if you take the seriousness out of it, a Trump presidency gives you material for 4 years that will be never-ending, right?
Yeah, I mean, there is a part of me just to, you know, obviously from a comedic perspective, it would be great, but you know, I don't think it would be great for the country.
Well, that's one of the issues they had with Obama. They kind of said the guy is not, you know, he's doing his job as president, but there's nothing to make fun of, not really from a comedic perspective very much.
I think that was in the very beginning.
It was in the beginning,
I think everybody
yeah.
found their safe spot with him. You know, there was pretty good impressions done of, I think, Keegan, you know, how Keegan approaches
right.
Keegan-Michael Key, and I think he found an inventive way to sort of, you know, send out the president.
I love it. For folks who are interested, as you said, in taking classes, let's just spend a moment on a couple of the resources available to them, because they can come, as you said, and take lessons and join the school. But talk a little bit about other opportunities there at Second City for folks, the Harold Ramis Film School, just so people know all the resources available.
Yeah, I mean, if anybody that's interested in taking a class, it's a fairly simple process. You just go online and see what you're interested in. If you're interested in a writing class or a performing, or if you're interested in the Harold Ramis School, there's an application process. It's a very, you know, we have a small student body for that, consciously decided to keep it, you know, kind of small so that we can give the best possible education. You know, that, again, you just go online and take a look at the application and go through that process. But there's enough, if you go online, take a look at our school, there's so many multiple subjects that are there that, you know, that a student could take that I'm sure there's something that would be of interest to them.
All right. And first of all, let's give the website so people know where to reach you, which is secondcity.com. Doesn't get easier than that. And thanks for your time. I really appreciate it. I'm sitting here trying to think of sort of names for shows. I've got a couple for you can use. I'll just give me credit for them. You could use the title, What's a Duck Worth?
Okay, I'm writing that down.
Nothing wrong with that. And and I had a Trump one. It just flew out of my head, so I'll call you back.
Okay, well,
it was funny, but you were dogging. And I lost it. Andrew Alexander with Second City, thanks for sharing information. Once again, we'll send people to secondcity.com, check out the performances. And I'll tell you what, everybody goes there as tourists. Everybody wants to see Second City. But if you live in this city and you haven't taken advantage of seeing Second City, you are truly missing one of the great comedic theatrical treasures of the city. And I'm just so glad you guys are based here.
Oh, thank you, Paul. I appreciate that. It's very nice of you.
Andrew, thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.